It's draft week, and we conclude our teams that will shape the draft series. Thor Nystrom of Fantasy Pros helps me break down a ton of teams today. We've got the lurking quarterback teams, Minnesota Vikings, Denver Broncos, Las Vegas Raiders. We've also got the teams of the top 10 that I can't quite figure out. New York Jets, New York Giants, and sort of, kind of, maybe the Tennessee Titans. Loaded pod, a lot of quarterback talk. Let's waste no more time. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and join me to do just that is the one and only Thor Nystrom of Fantasy Pros. Thor, what's going on, buddy?
Not a lot. We are 48 hours away from the NFL draft, so a very exciting time, and it is awesome to be with you, Mr. Harmon.
Oh, dude, it's always awesome to podcast with you. You do great work at Fantasy Pros covering the NFL draft, covering college football. You put out an awesome piece recently about the wide receiver class that I was digging into earlier this morning, finishing reading it because I had started it a couple weeks ago. It's a big beast of a piece, Thor, that you put out there. So the people definitely have to check that out. They have to check out all of your great work over at Fantasy Pros. But today, Thor, we are talking the teams that will shape the draft. We are concluding our teams that will shape the draft series. We actually were supposed to do this episode a few weeks ago, but your boy had to miss that episode. So we are doing it now, and we're covering two groups of teams this time. We're doing teams that will shape the draft, the quarterback lurking teams, which is perfect for you because I think you are the original J.J. McCarthy preacher. So we had to get you on for that particular episode because we're going to talk a lot of J.J. on this pod. We are also going to talk the teams in the top 10 that I can't quite figure out. So we're going to do a lot of that on the show. But before we do that, we do have a couple of quick programming notes for you here. Obviously, if you can't tell, if you're watching the YouTube version of the show, I am in studio here in Los Angeles. Did not move back to the West Coast. I'm here for all of these big draft events that I'm going to be laying out for you. If you haven't heard already, make sure to check out Mock Draft Monday, the final edition of Mock Draft Monday with Dane Brugler. It's in your podcast feed. It's up on YouTube today, Tuesday. The great Thor Nystrom is joining me as we conclude our teams that will shape the draft series. Tomorrow, Wednesday, we have a very special bonus edition of the podcast to celebrate draft week as NFL Network's Marcus Grant and my good pal Marcus Grant join me in the LA studio for a wish casting mock draft. We're going to tell you the ideal, maybe just pure fan fiction fantasy landing spots for all of the top skill position players in this draft. And big announcement on Thursday and Friday night, Yahoo Sports is going to be going live on draft night for a second screen experience. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, your social medias. Make sure to check it out. Look, we know you're going to be watching NFL Network and ESPN. We're going to have the stream up as well, okay? We're going to be watching those, but watch along with us, okay? So second screen experience, pop your laptop, your mobile device, whatever. Everybody's got 1,000 screens these days. Make sure one of them is on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. Yahoo Sports on YouTube. Pull it up. We're going to be live. Great cast, loaded cast to react to all the picks as they happen. Yahoo Senior NFL Insider Charles Robinson, Jason Fitz, Adam Gorney from Rivals, and former Patriots and Bills running back Damian Harris are going to join me for that. I'll be reacting to every receiver pick live as it happens, every skill position player, all the picks, man. It's going to be a great conversation, so make sure you save a screen for us. And of course, right here on the podcast, Charles McDonald and I are going to recap the draft after round one and then the conclusion of the entire draft. Expect those on your feeds Friday morning and Sunday. Okay, got all that. A lot of information. Good business out of the way. Let's jump into the meat of the show. Let's start off with the three teams that are kind of the quarterback lurkers. You know, the top three teams, those guys are all targeting quarterbacks. But these three teams, the Minnesota Vikings, the Denver Broncos, and the Las Vegas Raiders are the quarterback lurkers. These are, I think, the three teams that are most primed to trade up. Let's start with the Vikings. And the central offseason theme for them is just they're moving on to the next phase at quarterback. So, Thor, I know you know this organization really well. You know these quarterback prospects really well. I'll just start off with this. Have you ever seen a situation that's better set up to be an incubator for a rookie quarterback?
I don't think that I have. No. In terms of the receivers, you have the best receiver in football. You have a stud wide receiver two on the other side. You have one of the better pass catching tight ends in football out there. You have the starting tackle duo is one of the best in the NFL. And then you have one of the better play callers in the NFL. The whole thing has been set up right from the get there for a guy just to step in and have success right away. And you also have a situation where it appears that they're at least willing to be patient with the guy. I don't think necessarily they're saying that a guy could not start day one, the guy that they end up picking. But I think that they would exercise discretion depending on who that ends up being and what they see in training camp and whatnot. So it is a very good situation for whatever quarterback gets drafted there. And I think the non-Caleb Williams guys, I think they would be crossing their fingers that the Vikings are the team that calls their name.
And it seems like based on just where the tide is headed right now, draft buzz wise, which, by the way, all of that is just going to get fantastically blown up here in like 48 hours, as Thor said. All this draft buzz will just be shot to the moon and we'll be completely out of silly season, which I'm sure you can't wait for. I can't wait for either to just like actually see where this thing goes. But it sounds like basically all three of those guys, Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and JJ McCarthy, are in play potentially for any of these quarterback lurking teams. I don't, maybe not Jaden Daniels, but Drake May and JJ McCarthy definitely. But let's talk about these three guys just kind of, because I think they're going to apply to all three of these teams potentially that we're going to talk about here. Let's start with Jaden Daniels. Where do you come down on Jaden Daniels as a prospect and just like how he would potentially fit for a team like Minnesota?
Jaden Daniels is my QB2. I think he brings two superpowers to the NFL. It's the downfield throwing. He has such a good accuracy and placement, and that just sort of teardrop that he does downfield. It's so good. And then that in conjunction with the awesome scrambling, he is going to enter the NFL as one of the five or six best scramblers we've ever seen right from the get. So he presents a spacing math problem to opposing defensive coordinators. You have to keep two high safeties up there or else he's going to beat you downfield the entire time. We saw this at LSU last year. Matt, when we talk about Brian Thomas's evaluation, I loved your chart up of him that showed this so succinctly there of the percentage of routes where they sent Brian Thomas down the field. Yeah. And then people might be surprised how often Malik Nabers was used down the field based on his skill set. But this goes to what I'm talking about with Jaden Daniels. You leverage that to force the opposing defensive coordinator to delineate defensive resources there. Well, the upshot of that is now you can't keep a spy on Jaden Daniels. Now it is more difficult to blitz Jaden Daniels. You only get to have 11 guys out there. Jaden Daniels was also the best quarterback in the FBS last year against the blitz per PFF charting. So that's where you just get sort of an issue with that. He's gotten so much better in the pocket, going through his progression, the game slowing down to him. LSU did stuff for him the last couple of years to help with that. They have this really cool VR system that they put the kid in, and that he gets to see the defensive looks, and they run through the plays, and he has to point out the different, you know, coverage looks and different stuff like that. And then the guy that he's going to the ball with, he got so good at it by the end that they were running it in double speed. So he was basically playing the games in fast forward before they began. You saw when he was at Arizona State, you know, by that third season when there was the scandal with Herm Edwards and everything, the whole thing got blown up. His passing game had not progressed at all. And his natural ability then, there was this chain reaction where, because the game was moving too fast for him, his mind was bogging down. And because of that, all of his physical skills were playing down. Now, because he is seeing the field much better, he's much more calm back there. He's going through his progressions. He's making the smart decisions, whether it is to throw that ball or whether it's to tuck. And now you got a problem. Now I'm out in the open field, and now the sirens around the stadium are going off. The dinosaur has gotten out of the cage. They were in Jurassic Park, and all the defenders now are terrified because that guy gets down the field so freaking fast that the miles per hour and everything, the acceleration out of the pocket, and then his high-end speed is ludicrous as well. So those are the problems that he presents because of where his game has gone. I think the fits for Jaden Daniels, I think he's a guy that fits any of the three spots there at the, or any whether it's Washington. I think that there are things about his game that match what Cliff Kingsbury and the offensive brain trust there have looked for in their quarterbacks over their careers. I think he's a better fit probably for the Patriots, certainly than Drake May, at least initially. Yeah, like it, because that's you could project him better, first of all, to play early on than Drake May, but also the ability to create stuff where there isn't anything right away. My concern for Drake May in that situation would be getting tossed in right away where the supporting cast is poor. The one fit with Jaden Daniels, that it's not that I would pretend disaster or anything. It's just an interesting thought experiment, would be the Vikings, because Kevin O'Connell's entire aerial philosophy, it is inverted from the type of prospect that I just described. Jaden Daniels is the, I'm going to force you to defend deep, and then now you can't, it's harder for you to deal with me as a runner guy. And then also in the intermediate, that's where we get our spacing with that on the few times he does go there. But that is opened up only because he's so good downfield and that stuff. With O'Connell, it is the exact inverse of that, which is, we pepper the middle of the field over and over again to force you to bring defensive resources up to cover that so that we get our one-on-one shots down the sideline and down the field. It is the exact opposite. So if they took Jaden Daniels, they would have to work with him a bit with his game to try to fit it into that. There would have to be alterations on both sides. Not saying it wouldn't work, but there would have to be alterations.
Yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to ask you this, because in my mind, I have faith in Kevin O'Connell to execute that. Like I don't want to say full scale overhaul of the passing game as we know it in Minnesota, but I do think there would have to be sort of a meet in the middle, right? Which I trust Kevin O'Connell to do that, but just based on the offense that they've had recently, and by the way, I don't think they'll really have a chance at Jaden Daniels. I still think that he probably ends up going second overall. I think their options in Minnesota are probably going to be between these other two guys that we're about to talk about. But that's sort of why I wanted you to break that down, because I agree, like what he did in LSU just doesn't really map to this offense. But I think it can be successful in a different spot. So let's talk Drake May and JJ McCarthy here for the Minnesota Vikings specifically, and just kind of your overall evaluation, because I had a Washington fan hit me up and just be like, hey, okay, tell me about these two quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, just like your initial thoughts. For me, I just, real simple, I think Jaden Daniels is better for right now, which everything you just said, I think, backs that up. Like, you can build a really good offense on his rookie contract with Jaden Daniels. But I do think that Drake May might be a little bit better long term if he's developed correctly. And I think Minnesota, Thor, would be the ideal spot for him to develop early.
For sure. Yeah. With Drake May there, it's you would, first of all, the patience that could be exercised initially, the system is a perfect fit for him as far as the ability to throw those heat ring intermediate throws with accuracy, with the anticipation, and have the arm strength to beat the guys coming downhill on that. That is one thing that we got to see on his college tape. Very good fit, like we were talking about before, for KOC's offense. And then, of course, that supporting cast, like we were just talking about, and then the symmetry playing for the guy that coached you in high school, everything like that. So I think that's the perfect situation.
Josh McCown was the quarterback coach for Drake May in high school, and he's the quarterback coach currently in the Minnesota Vikings.
Josh McCown, and the pre-existing relationship there. The situation that I think where May's career could go the other way is where you're tossing immediately into a situation where you are seen as the savior. The supporting cast is not very good. And some of the weeds that are in Drake May's game right now, there hasn't been care to take them out before you are tossed to the wolves. And it's like, we now need you to elevate the games of all these guys around you because you're like the dude. I think it needs to go the other way. And that's how Drake May can play up and hit what is a very high ceiling for him and very exciting tools.
Yeah. I obviously charted Josh Downs in last year's draft class, and then charting Tez Walker in this year's draft class for reception perception. I mean, that was whiplash for me, Thor. I think for Drake May, that had to be a pretty big case of like, wow, this was my top guy the year before, and this is my top guy now, just stylistically, regardless of almost what you want to think about them as players, like stylistically, that's a big difference. Talk about like a third case of whiplash if he goes from Josh Downs is my best receiver to Tez Walker is my best receiver to now Justin Jefferson is my best receiver. Like, that gives him, I think, a real good chance to develop if he ends up being that guy. And I like your way of saying it, of the weeds have not truly been like plucked from his game. The care has not been taken to that. I think in this situation, the care would be taken for Drake May. But again, ultimately, I don't know about you, I think quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. Maybe Minnesota ends up trading to this third spot if they really do love Drake May, which I have heard they really do love Drake May. But to me, Thor, I think you make that trade for that second round, the second first round pick. with the opportunity to say, hey, if we can get any of these top four guys, we're comfortable with that. And that brings us to JJ McCarthy, who for most people is the QB4. I don't think he's the QB4 for you, because this has been your guy, man. If you followed Thor's work this draft season, you know he was one of the first people saying, like, JJ McCarthy has the tools to be a high-end prospect in the draft, not just some, like, little riser because of quarterback thirst, right? So tell the people, Thor, just kind of your journey in evaluating JJ McCarthy and why he might specifically be a really good fit with this offense.
Yeah, like early on in the process, what I was responding to was a narrative coming in where I think people were basing their evaluation on the stuff coming out of the season before 2022. And I think some of that stuff was fair, you know, stuff like locking on to Reed sometimes, mistakes he had made with that. There was some placement issues and stuff like that. But down the stretch in 2023, as they played this procession of murderer's row defenses, as they won the Big Ten title, then reached the college football championship because JJ McCarthy stormed back in the second half from a double-digit deficit against Nick Saban and that nasty defense of Alabama, and then won the national title, beating Penn State, Ohio State, Iowa.
Not bad.
Alabama, not bad. And then Washington in the title game as a 20-year-old true junior. JJ McCarthy's game had elevated. It was just so clear watching it week in and week out. Does he have the counting stats that some of the other guys do? No, because he doesn't get to throw screen passes every first down against the 80th ranked defensive strength on average like Bo Nix did. JJ McCarthy had to play the 38th ranked average defensive strength every single week. JJ McCarthy did not take a fourth quarter snap in 7 of the 15 games because Michigan was flogging their opponents. So JJ McCarthy had 2 games taken from him because of this, was playing the much better defenses than any of the top 6 guys on average. And then he did not have the empty calorie stats. When were JJ McCarthy's stats accrued? In the highest leverage situations possible, i.e. throwing on third and medium, third and long, when the defense knew what was coming, the high leverage spots against the best defenses in the nation. Again, Penn State, Ohio State, Iowa, Alabama, in those high leverage spots on the biggest stage. And that's where he succeeded wildly. The only reason the Michigan offense worked, it was because they were dominant on third down. Third down and medium, third down and long. It's not a sample size thing. JJ McCarthy had more of those type plays than these other quarterbacks as well. It's not just the success rate on it. That's why they were able to play the way that they played, because they had this trump card. The Michigan offense needed JJ McCarthy more than the other way around. We would have had a different national champion if Michigan did not have JJ McCarthy on its roster. So you have this 20-year-old true junior that wins the national title going back to high school. I believe he is 61-3, had 2 state titles in high school. One of them you could consider a national championship. That was the last year at IMG. Kid's a winner. People want to say that he was carried there by Michigan. Give me a break. The year before he got there, Michigan was 2-4. They were so bad that people wanted Jim Harbaugh out. JJ McCarthy commits there, keeps his commitment despite all this going on, helps them recruit this, what became this really good class. And then he helped turn Michigan into a colossus while he was there. Then just speaking to the on-field stuff, the kid's super duper athletic, 6 fastest, 3 cone at the NFL Combine, irregardless of position, even though he weighed in 17 pounds heavier than his Michigan bio, which also checked the size concerns on him. Kid has obvious arm strength, which, by the way, he retains on the move, including accuracy to all 3 levels of the field. That was confirmed as well at the NFL Combine with a 61-mile-per-hour max velo throw that was 1 mile per hour less than the NFL Combine record. The accuracy with that kid, he was number 5 in the FBS in catchable throw rate last year. And I mentioned how good my favorite thing about his projection going to the next level is, a lot of quarterbacks, athletic and have a good arm, not a ton have those things working together in conjunction when they're on the field. McCarthy is one of those guys, extremely creative and takes his mechanics with him on the run, eyes downfield, upper body cock to throw with the throwing platform under him when he's moving around in the backfield, no matter what. That's how he can get the ball so quickly and how he sees these guys moving down the field, even if it's on the, you know, outside the opposite hash. He was 72% in change completions in the aggregate last season, 71% in change while scrambling. accuracy, completion percentage. It's incredible to only lose one percentage off that on the move. To give you a, for instance, Michael Penix, while he's scrambling, lost over 20 percentage off his completion percentage. Everyone loses more than that, but McCarthy really close because of those reasons. A prospect who is undersold coming into the process, and the narrative has caught up to reality on that.
I can't remember what game it was, and you probably would, but I think there's one play where, just to speak to the athleticism, I think he hands the ball off to Blake Corum, and like Corum runs for a long touchdown, and McCarthy is running with him stride for stride. Now, he's not like the ball carrier on that play. Obviously, there's a different aspect of that, but the guy is athletic. I think that's like not sneaky white quarterback athletic. Like, he's just a pretty good athlete for quarterback play. And I agree with you that he's a guy that, it's fair to say, like, I think he's a difficult evaluation just because you got to do a lot of work, man, right? Like, you don't get a ton of dropbacks with this guy to evaluate like you do with all of the other quarterbacks. But like you said, so much of college football is like these Mickey Mouse offenses, these empty calorie stats. I mean, give me a break. Like, the more you watch of J.J. McCarthy, the more you see him do like NFL things, rip throws over the middle. That was the thing that stood out to me watching Roman Wilson, is like, there are times where I'm like, is that open? It, you know, cause I'm charting whether he's open or not. I'm like, that really is a very tight window that Roman Wilson's got in zone coverage here, but JJ McCarthy fires that thing in there, and that's NFL quarterback play. That's, by the way, that's Minnesota Vikings NFL quarterback play. So I understand like the logic that the Vikings went through here, which is we are putting ourselves in a position to trade up because if nothing else, we love this guy. And like, this guy's a great fit for our offense. So before we move off the Vikings here and talk about some of these other teams, just because look, like, the most important players we're going to talk about from a fantasy perspective are probably on this team, including Justin Jefferson, who was the number one overall consensus pick in drafts last year. If you want, just forget about best quarterback, like who you think will develop the best, whatever. For the selfish fantasy players out there who just want the best thing for Justin Jefferson next year, Thor, which one of these quarterbacks, between Drake May and J.J. McCarthy, do you want to be drafted by the Vikings?
If it was just for next year, for sure, McCarthy, because I don't know the utility you're going to get from Drake May as far as a value add against a Sam Darnold in year one. I think that with May, it's for the future when you're thinking about him. McCarthy is the guy, I think, where you could potentially get that value add in year one. You were sort of alluding to this, Matt, but he's coming from a pro-style system, for a sitting NFL head coach where they were so successful last year. A 12-personnel offense has some stylistic similarities to Mr. O'Connell's offense. Now, the Michigan one, of course, was more run-leaning. But that's the foot it was led with on the early downs. And then they leveraged the high leverage ones. That's where McCarthy was of great use. Whereas O'Connell's, it's led, you know, sort of with the opposite foot on the early downs. But the other stuff is very similar as far as that stuff goes. So McCarthy is going to be extremely similar. And then the sectors that they attack through the air. So I think that's the one where Jefferson could get a little bit of a value bump for this coming season if they took him.
All right, let's move on to Denver Broncos here. And central offseason theme for them, to me, is just what are we, right? Because to me, I look at this roster, Thor, and it's pretty blank slate. On the offensive side of the football, like, they have Cortland Sutton, who wants a new contract. He didn't report to offseason activities earlier a couple weeks or last week. So he wants a new contract. Maybe he deserves one, maybe he doesn't. I don't know. The rest of the receiver core is pretty up in the air, right? Like, Marvin Mims didn't show us too much as a rookie. Josh Reynolds is like a solid starter. The backfield is sort of committee-based. It's very murky, right? But I think the one thing that we can say with certainty, Thor, is that you're not running into the season with a quarterback room of Jarrett Stidham, Zach Wilson now. Sorry for not doing breaking news analysis on the Zach Wilson trade yesterday. I was flying in here to LA, so didn't get a chance to cover that backwards and forwards. But Zach Wilson and, you know, Ben DiNucci, they want a new quarterback in this draft. So again, put your GM hat on here, Thor. Of these guys that they could realistically trade up for, let's put like Bo Nix and Michael Penix aside for a second. Which one of these guys do you think fits a Sean Payton offense best? Because that's a little bit different than the offense we just broke down.
Yeah, I think I hate to put it this way, but whoever they can get access to, and I'm not sure that I'm not sure that they'll get access to any of them. But I think Sean Payton would take whatever he could get vis-a-vis those top four quarterbacks. Desperation is a stinky cologne, and boy, are they desperate. You lay out the top three quarterbacks they have right now. I totally agree. They're coming out of this draft with someone at least they feel that they can start next year. I just don't think that they're going to get access to one of those top four guys. But I think whoever it would be, if there's a scenario where one falls a little bit deeper and for whatever reason the Vikings aren't able to make that move up. And I think this scenario probably require that the Giants pass on QB4, but then somehow the Vikings are not able to get their trade up. Or maybe it's the Vikings that have traded up with the Patriots, which then erases the Patriots from that board. And then maybe the Broncos beat the Patriots back up the board for a fallen QB4. Outside of that scenario, I think with the Giants or with the Broncos, you're probably looking at those sort of tier two quarterbacks, which for fans of the Denver Broncos, I hope is at least done with discretion on day two, as opposed to the egregious reach that it would be at number 13. 12 or at least trading to the back end of the first round. Bo Nix at number 12 would be one of the great, most audacious reaches that we have seen over the last decade in the NFL draft.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think Bo Nix is fine. I don't think he's a guy you want 12th overall, right? Like you can have him maybe at QB5 if you just like his style. I think it's a debate. I think that's perfectly fine. But he's probably – like I outlined this situation in an article I just wrote for Yahoo. I outlined a scenario where from just, again, pure selfish fantasy stuff, I think this would be nice for Denver. You take Brock Bowers at 12, and then that desperation that you mentioned there with Sean Payton, that overtakes you to a point where you give up future assets because – look, he's the head coach. He doesn't care about future picks. Like, oh, it doesn't work out in Denver for Sean Payton. He's just going to retire and go back to TV. It doesn't matter. None of this matters for him. And then he gets back up into the late first round, maybe early second round, and takes Bo Nix. Like, I actually think then you've got something on offense. Whether it's good team building or not, different discussion. But I think you've got something on offense if you take Brock Bowers at 12 and you get back up for Bo Nix. But I agree with you that Bo Nix at 12 is a little crazy. I will say this, though. Thor, again, the D word, desperation. I do think there is enough desperation from Sean Payton's side, just from the Broncos in general. Like, I mean, even the GM, George Payton, he's definitely desperate. He's somehow clinging on to his job after the Russell Wilson debacle here. So he's somehow clinging on to this job. Could we see a situation where the Denver Broncos, like, maybe they give up Pat Surtain and a bunch of future picks to get up to four for McCarthy? I do think that is in play. Like, I think they are desperate. I think they're desperate enough to outbid the Vikings is kind of the vibe that I'm getting from the team.
Yeah, they definitely could go YOLO. It's, you know, one of the scenarios. The only issue with that is being capped out, and then they don't have all their draft equity because of some of these other moves that they made in the Sean Payton trade and different stuff like that. It becomes, if you do that, and you're like, let's just go YOLO, blow up our next two drafts and give someone a contributor on our current roster. It becomes you have no assets. And then this barren roster, it's like, yeah, sure. Now you have the quarterback of the future. But what else? It's a wasteland around him.
Yeah. Well, you Thor, as the if McCarthy is the guy there, as the, like I said, the chief conductor of the J.J. McCarthy Express, in 3 years, you'll be like, you guys can't. Hey, you people over there, you can't judge J.J. McCarthy. He's got no one around him. OK, he's not working with anybody. So that is the situation that Denver would find itself in for sure. But again, I think the desperation is there. And I think, like, from a stylistic perspective, I actually do think if we're strictly talking McCarthy, I think he would fit in this offense pretty well, because we think so much of, you know, Sean Payton's offense as the later portions of Drew Brees' career and stuff like that. But early Drew Brees time in New Orleans with Sean Payton, they're really pushing the ball over the middle of the field on play action plays on the back of a very, very good run game. I don't know if they'll have a great run game in Denver, because I'm kind of iffy on the backs there. I don't know how you feel about it. But overall, I think that he would map well to that style of Sean Payton's offense.
For sure. Yeah. And there's stuff that you can do. You know, the Brock Bowers to Denver is one that I like if he ends up getting there, and then manufacture it with the day two stuff. you know, as far as Bo Nix goes, I have nitpicks about the tape, which, you know, I don't know if you want to get totally into the weeds on that one, but
go for it.
Okay. Well, you know, people are like, they see my board and I have Bo Nix like at the end of the third round. And then I get these questions like, why do you hate Bo Nix? It's not that I hate Bo Nix. I think I've seen more of Bo Nix over the last 5 years than anyone outside of Bo Nix's family members. And it goes beyond that. I've watched Bo Nix so many times over the spring, watching the cutups over to be like, what am I missing with him? To me, the late third round is being optimistic about Bo Nix. Someone show me where the beating and like the things that translate to the NFL are on his Oregon film, which is the only thing that you can point to because that is where the box scores stats were accrued. The Auburn stuff obviously was not very good in any facet. When he moves over to Oregon, the accuracy numbers juice up, the yards juice up, the touchdowns juice up, and people want to think that that makes him a first-round prospect. No, it's because the offensive system inoculated him from the things he was struggling with at Auburn, which is sitting back in the pocket, going across the progressions, surveying his options, making the correct decision, important point, after the snap, while the bullets are flying, and then doing that and then making the throw downfield. He doesn't do that. He doesn't do it effectively, at least. That's why he ends up leaving Auburn, and then it doesn't denote the pass rush either. What you see at Oregon, a metric ton of his production came on throws either behind the line of scrimmage, his tape, it's just this procession of the first down, like snap, the field is spread for him. He immediately knows where it's going because it's a numbers game. What Bo Nix is doing in that system, he counts the numbers on both sides of the field, field spread out for him. He knows where the number advantage is. That gives him the pre-delineated read. So on the ones where it's just throw it to the guy on the left, and then he's got the blockers in front of him, now you get the free yak yardage. He went something like 123 for 125 on throws last year behind the line of scrimmage. And people want to be like, he's the most accurate quarterback in the class. It's like, if an NBA player only shot layups, or that was a majority of his things, would you say he's a better shooter than Steph Curry? Like, are you kidding? It's the same sort of thing with the stuff within 10 yards, the stuff down the field. Those are also pre-delineated reads. You can tell this from the system where they get a matchup on a dude and also have the numbers advantage. And even on those, so he would get all these advantageous looks downfield. His game is risk averse to this incredible degree where even when the guy would have the step or whatever, and any of these other quarterbacks in this class would just rip it at that point. And all you got to do is lead him up the field, free touchdown because there's no safety back. You saw this over and over again with Bo Nix where he would baby lollipop the throw towards the pylon because that guaranteed there was a 0% chance that the defender could make a play on the ball. Well, he wouldn't have been able to make a play on the ball if you had the NFL oomph on your arm to do the bullet thing over and get it up high there. But that's where the risk aversion comes in with him. And again, all those answers are given to him in advance. I saw it over and over again on the Oregon tape last season when he's accruing these, you know, bazooka stats. Bo Nix missing wide open dudes all over the field because he is locked in on that answer that he got before the snap. And I realized the stats were good, but understand the context of where those stats came from. And again, in addition to all this, he had the good supporting cast around him in this very cleverly constructed offense. And Oregon played the average 80th defensive strength last season. So it was against an FCS team. And then Stanford, who had this dog, you know what, defense. Colorado, the underbelly of the Pac-12 in this gimmicky offense, a bunch of screens and all pre-delineated reads. That stuff does not translate to the NFL.
No, yeah. And look, I think Bo Nix makes sense in this particular offense here in Denver. But overall, like, there's a lot of offenses I don't think it makes sense for. And even still, like I said, I like Bo Nix as like a day two quarterback because I think he can he can give you functional quarterback play, potentially even early in his career. But 5 years from now, Thor, even if it's Sean Payton, even if it's this offense, he's having that Jared Goff conversation with himself where it's just like, and like, that's nice. Jared Goff, like, that's a compliment to say you're Jared Goff, right? But he's having that Jared Goff, Sean McVay conversation with himself where he's like, am I running into a hard ceiling here? Am I running into a hard ceiling with this quarterback? And I think the answer is going to be yes, right? Like, I think best case scenario, Bo Nix is Teddy Bridgewater, which, by the way, that's fine. Teddy Bridgewater, good player. Like, he's had some moments in the league, but I don't think you take Teddy Bridgewater at 12 overall. Like, I don't think you take that career path at 12 overall.
For sure. And by the way, Teddy at Louisville, definitely better than Bo Nix. You know, I'm saying
like who Teddy Bridgewater became, right?
For sure. Yeah, but like Bo Nix, I think a guy from the past couple of years that is a comp like that for fans out there would be Kenny Pickett. It was a very similar go back to Kenny Pickett's last year at Pittsburgh. Kenny Pickett the 4 years before that hadn't been very good, which you could evoke to Bo Nix's time at Auburn. Then they bring in an offensive coordinator who had a very, very clever system to address the deficiencies in Kenny Pickett's game. And they also had a guy named Jordan Addison. And so what they did, it was like this levels passing system, very similar to what they got with Bo Nix, where Kenny Pickett would count the numbers pre-snap when they had the look of the screen pass on the outside. They did it every single time. So now, and then you eventually had to bring the defense up because they just kept gouging you free 4 yards, free 5 yards, free 6 yards, right? Just literally free completions. You'd have to bring the defense up. That's when they started attacking the intermediate. So the three guys out on the left or whatever, then they would start flowering out to the intermediate as opposed to the screen. And then we block. Now the defense is up. So that becomes a little more difficult. And it started to get confusing about who's going where. And then, of course, you had a first round NFL route running off of Doncio and Jordan Addison, who is the one where all the defense is like, where's that guy? Where is he going? Whatever. And then from there, it flowered out to the deep shots. But it was the same thing of the pre-delineated looks, all based on the defensive numbers pre-snap. That's how Kenny Pickett accrued that the enormous jump in his accuracy from that just dose of screen passes out there to Addison. And then when we started to go downfield, it was in response to the defense moving up to take away the freebie stuff and then throwing it in one-on-one advantageous looks to a first-round NFL receiver down the field when he had already beaten his guy.
Yeah, I actually think Kenny Pickett's a pretty good comp for Bo Nix. And, you know, the Steelers got tired of Kenny Pickett a lot quicker than I just outlined for, like, Sean Payton getting tired of Bo Nix. So I do think that's a pretty good comparison there. Let's move on to the Raiders here. Again, central offseason theme for them is just an identity transition under Antonio Pierce. You know, we know what they want to be, right? We saw it at the end of last year. They want to run the ball successfully. They want to take shots downfield. You know, we had Daniel Jeremiah on the show and for Mock Draft Monday, and he was like the first one that I saw making the Michael Penix to Raiders connection. And that does make sense in my mind. Although, Thor, I will say this, like if they wanted to get aggressive, which of the three teams, I think they're the least likely to trade up. But let's just play hypothetical because we're 48 hours from the draft and what the hell else are we supposed to do other than do a little bit last more fan fiction here for draft season? I think if they did trade up, like if McCarthy fell a little bit, I actually think this non-Minnesota, like of the non-Minnesota teams, I think this might be the best spot for him to land in because I think he could be incubated a little bit because Gardner Minshew's there and he's like a functional quarterback. And I mean, Davante Adams on dig routes and crossing routes with JJ McCarthy when he gets on the field, I can see McCarthy succeeding in this environment.
For sure. And stylistically, I'm with you. I think the only and I'm with you also on the I'm not sure that Las Vegas goes YOLO and that ends up being the prerogative with one potential long shot exception. That would be for Jaden Daniels. And the reason for that is the pre-existing relationship, of course, with Antonio Pierce and Jaden Daniels. There's been some smoke that Jaden Daniels would like to play for Las Vegas. I know that Antonio Pierce would love to have him again. Antonio Pierce helped bring Jaden Daniels out of high school to Arizona State before that whole situation blew up like I was talking about before, but they are still very, very close. I think that's and Matt, I totally agree with you. They have less desperation than the Broncos and the Raiders. It's not like they are replete with draft assets. They have their quarterback room isn't awesome, but competent-ish guys in Minshew and then O'Connell, who they got last year. I think they're better off using the first rounder on something else. And then whether it's would be very late first if there's a trade scenario or whether it's very early second, if you want to go Penix there. But I think the only scenario of going YOLO up the board, which again, I see as a long shot, it would be for Daniels. But I agree with you as far as the overall offensive environment there for a young kid if something like that happened.
Yeah, hey, Antonio Pierce, you were too good, pal. You're too good to get your guy, Jaden Daniels. You shouldn't have won so many games. And then, of course, you win so many games, that's probably why you have the job. So, listen, it's a double-edged sword there with Antonio Pierce. But yeah, I do think, hey, Davante Adams, Jacoby Myers running some slot fades, you know, some boundary routes for Davante Adams, at least that would be awesome with Jaden Daniels. That would be an environment, I think, where he could succeed and be like a potential fantasy difference maker in year one, honestly, could Jaden Daniels if he landed in this spot. But I'm with you that I ultimately don't see that happening. I think they either reach for a quarterback like a Michael Penix in round one, or they hopefully just take him in round two. I think that would ultimately be best for everyone involved. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll run through three teams in the top 10 that I can't quite figure out. All right, we're back. Let's talk New York Giants here, one of the three teams in the top 10 that I can't quite figure out. Central offseason theme for the New York Giants is, where are we, right? Broncos were what are we? I don't know what the hell the Broncos are. I'm kind of confused, Thor, like where the Giants are in their team building process. You know, they overperformed in Brian Daboll's first year. They dramatically underperform in his second year to the point that I kind of think now the pressure is a little bit on New York. Like there's some buyer's remorse with the Daniel Jones contract, whether anybody wants to say it inside the building or not, you know, in front of a microphone. I just think that's the reality of the situation. So do you think this is a good environment for any of these quarterbacks to land in, or do you think they should go somewhere else with that sixth overall pick, you know, maybe, or trade up or trade down the board, whatever?
I don't think it's a good situation for the quarterback. And I have a hard time parsing this thing as well. I know that the folks in town that run my NFL organization, that's what they have been preoccupied with as well. I think they would, if it was legal to try to bug that building, I think that they would like to do that to try to get to the bottom of exactly what we're talking about. What is the Giants' intention? It's been put out in the media. Some have suggested directly by the Giants, whether genuine or the opposite of genuine, that the Giants will take QB4 if he is on the board at number six. Of course, the idea of why would you put it out there if it's not true is to incentivize a team like the Vikings to move ahead of you so that one of the stud receivers, ostensibly, but also offensive linemen could be in play as well. Two areas of Giant, pun intended, acute need for New York, that one of those guys falling down, right? Because you take one of the teams above you off the board, whether it's Arizona or the Chargers. Would the Giants take take the quarterback, or will they take the wide receiver? It's hard to know. But I think as far as the quarterback thing goes, you have this coaching staff that may or may not be on the hot seat. I think the front office feels a lot safer. So you have sort of conflicting motivations of those two different things. And then as far as the roster itself, while they need this desperate immediate help for their receiving core and the offensive line, you can make the argument, particularly from the management side, for the quarterback, not only for the long-term view of it and then the develop him and yada yada, but also the short-term view of it, which is looking at it from a different way, the economics of it. We were just talking about the Denver Broncos and how they got into this very desperate, weird situation that they're in. They made a mistake with the quarterback contract. And at the end of the season last year, this led to some drama where the Denver Broncos could not risk Russell Wilson being hurt after the season when they were allowed to release Russell Wilson, because if he was injured at that time, they wouldn't be allowed to release him. And past a certain date, whatever it was when the league calendar switched over, that would mean that Russell Wilson's next season, there was one more year where it would be guaranteed, all the year of that contract would become guaranteed. Then you can't release him when Denver did. So yeah, they were able to move on. That's why they benched him at the end of last year. Moving back to the Giants, if the Giants were to take a quarterback at six, I think it gives them a far more plausible deniability to keep Daniel Jones affixed to the bench next year when they are in a very similar circumstance. The Giants, because of the cap, have to keep Daniel Jones on the roster this coming season. They can move on for a very small cap hit next offseason, but not if Daniel Jones is hurt on the day when that can happen. So you need Daniel Jones healthy then. They might be looking for a plausible reason to keep him on the bench for these reasons. I don't know that Drew Locke is that. But just as far as short-term stuff for the roster itself and the quality of the roster for next season, it very obviously would be a wide receiver here. But this is all the different factors that Kwesi and those guys are thinking through when thinking, do we absolutely 100% need to jump the Giants in order to get that QB4?
Yeah, and like, hey, is Daniel Jones going to be healthy at the end of the season when we want to try to bench him to get away from these injury guarantees? Is Daniel Jones even going to be healthy week one, right? Like, this guy's coming off an ACL tear, and he's had a recurring neck issue at the NFL level. Like, there's been a lot of injuries even just before, like, before considering what might be happening at the end of the season. So if they want to take a quarterback, like, they're, I think, justifiable. By the way, just, you know, like you mentioned, you know, saving your own ass here. Like, you take a young quarterback, you can say, like, can't fire us at the end of the year. We're trying to develop these guys. I don't know if any NFL owner actually thinks that way, if they ever actually take that into account. I think, like, they mostly just fire the guys they want to fire regardless of the quarterback plan, and, like, somebody else will fix our mistake. They did that with Daniel Jones, to be honest. So I don't know. I go back and forth on the quarterback thing with the Giants, but overall, I'm with you that receiver or tackle is probably the spot here. I mean, they did sign Jermaine Illuminor to be the right tackle. Andrew Thomas is a stud at left tackle. But, I mean, this is another team very similar to the next team we're going to talk about, where you can say it looks good on paper, but you know how it's going to go in with injuries in the season. You can't have too much protection. So as much as we're talking about the Chargers all the time, Thor, as a wide receiver or tackle team, I do kind of think we have to consider that with the Giants here. But it sounds like you think – when they get on the clock there at six, hypothetically, this is what happens, they should just lock in and take one of these stud receivers.
I think that's what I would do in their situation. If I had a job in that building, I think, certainly on the coaching staff, I think that's what I would want to do. But I understand the motivations on the other way that could push it to quarterback. It's just that then you're truly punting next season. They don't have a viable receiving core, and I still have major concerns about that offensive line. So it's like you're almost sending next year's roster in lambs into a slaughter if you don't delineate it to short-term help that pick.
I mean, all these teams that we've talked about, like, okay, I can see them being a good incubator for a quarterback. I mean, you're running out of receiver core, and look, it's a deep draft of receivers. They can take someone on day two, whatever. But, like, Darius Slayton, Wandale Robinson, Jalen Hyatt, Isaiah McKenzie, not good enough. Okay, Darren Waller, is he even going to play this year? He has not decided that, and he said he's not going to decide it, but on anybody's timeline other than his own. Which, hey, it's his prerogative. He should do that. The running back position, man. Like, they have to take a running back in this draft, in my opinion. Devin Singletary at the top of the depth chart, not good enough. That would easily be, is it a worse situation than Denver? I think it might even be a worse situation than Denver, just because at least in Denver, you've got one go-to guy and you have a proven play caller, where I'm kind of back and forth on Brian Daboll and the Mike Kafka brain trust, because loved what I saw the first year, kind of hated what I saw last year. So if I'm the Giants too, I'm locking in on one of these playmakers. We'll talk about this on tomorrow's podcast as to which wide receiver I think they should take. So I won't spoil that for tomorrow's show. But let's talk through the Jets here, who are in the similar situation that we just talked about. Offensive tackle, wide receiver, Thor. You put Band-Aids on those position. You know, what's the meme with the giant leaking glass and they slap the tape on it and, like, fixed it?
Flex seal.
There it is. They flex sealed both of those positions in free agency with Tyron Smith and Mike Williams. But we know those are not.
Take a look at the help section in your Alexa.
Alexa, flex seal.
Shout out.
The flex seal just got Alexa.
Amazing. Hey, Amazon, sponsor the podcast, please. Look, we're getting Alexa in the show. Okay, Alexa. Enough of you already. The Jets need help still at help. Talk about the help section. The Jets still need to read the help section at the offensive tackle and wide receiver position, despite putting the flex seal Band-Aids of Tyron Smith and Mike Williams on there. So, Thor, put yourself in Joe Douglas's shoes, or Aaron Rodgers, whoever the real GM is here. Where are you thinking at that 10th overall selection? Or are you even maybe considering, like, a trade down and collect more assets type of thing?
Well, we've been talking about lingering teams in on this episode, and the Jets, they're not a lingering team for the quarterback, but they are a lingering team for Roma Dunze. I hear that they really, really like Roma Dunze, and if Roma Dunze starts falling down a little bit, you know, his range has been in that 8-9 window, so it doesn't have to be by much. Could he even fall through the wickets all the way to them? But I know that they're going to be making phone calls up 8-9 with Roma Dunze there. If they're in their spot, Roma's taken a couple spots ahead of them. I think that's where it comes down to the Brock Bowers against the offensive lineman discussion. I still buy Brock Bowers if they don't get access to Rome Odunze, because I think you need to add more weapons for Aaron Rodgers. And they did do their at least short-term flex seal on that offensive line, which that's all you're concerned about with the Aaron Rodgers window that has been afforded to you. You need to do a little bit of that thing with the weapons that he has. They could use upgrades at both the tight end position. I only put it in air quotes because I don't consider Brock Bowers. He's just the guy you get the ball to any way possible. He's going to advance it forward. And then also in the slot. So, like, and obviously a position that Brock Bowers can be greatly deployed out of and give you options as far as that goes. So I think whether it's Odunze and you fortify that receiving core greatly, or whether it is Bowers, I think that those are the top two guys on their list that would be realistic in that slot.
Yeah, folks who listen to this podcast know that I'm a little concerned about the Brock Bowers, Nathaniel Hackett, like, galaxy braining. I don't know that I trust of any coach to deploy Brock Bowers in, like, all these creative ways we want. I don't know if Nate Hackett's the guy to pull it off, but Rome Odunze would make so much sense. I mean, he's a guy in a high-end range of outcomes I compared to, like, Davante Adams' game, stylistically. We know that Aaron Rodgers obviously has a history with Davante Adams. He has a history with maximizing this type of wide receiver. I think that would be ideal. I don't know. I mean, I guess if they just sacrifice their third rounder, right, potentially to move up a few spots, or maybe they have 2 fourth rounders, so potentially maybe that's what they could do if they need to just jump from 1 to 7 or something like that. If he starts to fall 1 to 8, I think the Falcons would gladly drop down a couple of spots to still take one of the top defensive players. I think the Bears, even like a pick swap with the Bears, if some teams are trying to trade ahead of the Jets, I do think the options are there if they want to go with Rome Odunze. But I'm a little more tackle leaning than you are, it sounds like, in this spot, just because what I don't want to have happen is Tyron Smith gets hurt and then Aaron Rodgers gets hurt right after. Like, that's my nightmare if I'm Joe Douglas. But I mentioned the 7th overall pick. One of these teams that could potentially be a trade down team is the Tennessee Titans, who, Thor, I don't even know if they really fit in this exercise anymore, because when I first mapped out the podcast schedule, that was prior to, in terms of the topics, like, they were one of the teams in the top 10 that I can't quite figure out. That was before their free agency, where in free agency, Thor, like, central offseason for the team, what they told us was, we're pushing. We're trying to win right now, and we think we can do it with Will Levis, at least to some degree. There's some degree of confidence there because they signed Calvin Ridley. They bring in Tony Pollard. They add some players on the defensive side of the football, Legarius Sneed, Chidobe Awuzie, like, on kind of patch that cornerback position up. So now it just seems like the Titans in every mock draft are locked in to Joe Alt, or if Joe Alt goes 5th to the Chargers, the mock drafter just gives them the next best offensive tackle on his or her board. Is that how you see this playing out with Tennessee? And I do want you to address that. If Joe Alt is off the board, well, is number one, is Joe Alt your offensive tackle one? And if he is, who's your number two, and who should they kind of lock in that situation?
Yes, Joe Alt is amazing. And I'm not just saying that because his father went to the local high school that I live right next to in Columbia Heights, and they're from around here. But, you know, obviously, his son Joe goes to Notre Dame, the NFL bloodlines. He is this massive kid. The athletic profile in the last 2 years was utterly dominant at Notre Dame in both phases of the game. Awesome run blocker, awesome in pass pro. I don't know what you question about his game. I can't really poke weaknesses in him. It's a very good tackle class at the top, and to me, he stands head and shoulders above it, literally and figuratively. For me, it is, if he falls down there because of that scenario we're talking about, where the Chargers end up being the trade down team, you're going to have to tase Jim Harbaugh, get him out of the war room, and then you know, chain him up if the Chargers stick and pick at 5 and it's not, and you're like, no, we want to take Malik Nabers. I don't know that Jim Harbaugh is going to allow you if it's, you know, Joe Alt's on the board. But if the Chargers trade down and then, you know, it's a quarterback team, obviously, and then Joe Alt gets through to the number 7 slot, to me, that is the most no-brainer pick of all time. If it's Joe Alt goes above that, I think that is where the trade down comes into play, because I agree the tackle still remains by far number one on the priority list for Tennessee, and particularly the blind side, which I'll talk about in a second. But the guy who would make the most sense, because the you asked who the next tackle was on my board. Well, it's J.C. Latham, and a lot of other guys that their number two guy are likewise right tackle projections for the next level. I would like to get a left tackle to Tennessee, and I think Tennessee might have the same lean that I feel like there. But would they have Fatanu or Fashanu up that high? Olufoshanu as well, a guy who draws many different opinions on both sides. Yeah. So it would make sense for Tennessee to move down. But those are the only two guys I think you could argue could be long-term left tackle guys. Fashanu being the one guy who is obvious. If Fashanu can't make it at left tackle in the NFL, he is in trouble. But he is the pure pass-blocking guy, which I think is very important in the case of the Titans. Because what is Will Levis's game? What did we talk about all last process? The frame, like that he's athletic, like that he has a big time arm. The one thing that we questioned about him, it was standing back there in the pocket, denoting the pass rush, saw him get nailed from behind so many different times at Kentucky, and then the panic under pressure when he would finally denote that. If you're going to give Will Levis one more opportunity, which the Titans are obviously going to do, it needs to be a legitimate one. Or else how are you going to know if he is good or not? You can't put him behind these crappy offensive tackles, because I will tell you what will happen next year if you do. Will Levis is going to stink.
Yeah.
If he gets the immediate pressure, particularly from the blind side, I've seen it over and over again. You go back to the Kentucky years and even the brief times we got to see him at Penn State. This movie has been seen. We know what's going to happen. Give him a real shot by giving him a decent offensive line. Your only path to that is getting a solid, starting left tackle that can protect on the blind side. Fashanu is the one guy with that. That's the great part of his eval. The last 2 years, he did not give up one sack. The run blocking with him is the question, and that's why he might fall down a little bit. But that could present a trade down opportunity for the Titans. If Alt is there, stick and pick, get that card in real quick. If he's not, you can do a little maneuvering down the board, because I think some of those guys that are ranked a little bit higher, at least for me, some other evaluators as well, they're the right tackle guys. But Fashanu, Fatanu, I think would be the two guys for the Titans. And I think you could move down a little bit and still get one of those guys.
Yeah. And again, trade down potentially with the Jets. We just sort of outlined that situation. Yeah, Will Levis. I mean, the Titans overall were second highest in sack percentage last season. Obviously, Ryan Tannehill started for them as well. But man, I think they'll be right up there again, because Will Levis is definitely a sack eater at the position, unless they get a guy like Fashanu, who I think that does make sense. Like, he's not a guy you see mocked that high very often, but if they're just looking for a pure pass protector, which they should with those receivers that they've kind of accumulated, I like that line of thinking there. Well, Thor Nystrom, you are the man, buddy. We covered so much ground in this episode, and you know it was a long time coming because we had to push this one back, but well worth the wait, my friend. Appreciate you joining the show. Tell the people what they can look for from you from a coverage perspective this draft season.
Dude, thanks so much for having me. It's always a blast to talk to you. I'm the biggest fan of your work and the depth of the weeds that you get into at the receiver position. I'm a huge fan of yours. So really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. You guys can find me on X at ThorKU, and then at Fantasy Pros, just dropped the 500 player big board with 500 comps. You can find that at fantasypros.com.
500 players, people.
500 comps. /Thor500. And then on Thursday and Friday night, Fantasy Pros, as the draft is going, we have live shows on our YouTube channel. So check that out if you want a second screen experience for the draft.
Third screen, you the Yahoo screen, the main screen, and three the screens. Fantasy. Three screen this thing.
Put all the different screens up.
Yeah, I mean, I know you got them. Everybody's got TVs, connected devices, laptops, whatever. So make sure you do that. That is going to do it for us today. Appreciate you again, Thor. We are going to be back tomorrow with our bonus podcast this week, NFL Media's Marcus Grant. Oh my God, Marcus Grant is going to be joining us in the LA studio as we wish cast the best skill position players to our favorite teams from a fantasy perspective tomorrow. Until then, we're out.